You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
You know, when I go to Denny's, I like Moons Over My Hammy. You ever have that? It's that breakfast sandwich with the egg and the cheese and the slab of ham. It's so good. We'll call this Goals Over Crew Hammy or something. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. There was a Miami reference in there somewhere. Welcome to the Mass Report podcast. We are not at a Saucy Brew Works, and that makes us sad. We're online staring at each other's faces, but we'll be back there on Monday. I appreciate you guys' indulgence on Monday. I just wasn't feeling well at all and thought maybe something was coming on. Maybe I was just depressed over the game this past Saturday. We'll find out. Like and subscribe if you would. Murph is here. And Brett is here. And Bart, good to see you, Bart.
Good to see you, buddy.
Bart is winning the book game in the background there. I almost feel like I'm talking to an expert on like national security or energy policy or is that what do you
you can smell the rich mahogany.
Yeah. And the sweater really ties it all together. Oh, definitely. Yes. Yeah. So is there a book behind you that you've read recently?
Let's see. I think one of the most, the one that I really enjoyed was the Jakarta Method. Would really encourage it for anybody who wants to, you know, learn a little bit about CIA goings on in the in Southeast Asia.
Oh, that's right in my wheelhouse, man. Yeah, I'll be over to borrow that from you. All right. Well, you're reading about the CIA, do you have any conspiracy theories over why the crew can possess the ball 70% of the time, Bart, and not manage to do much anything with it?
I go with Occam's razor on that one. It's just Don Garber. The answer is Don Garber. going back. There are some people saying after that game that, you know, it reminded them of this team under Caleb Porter. And I didn't feel that way about it. Maybe it's a couple, you know, we need a couple more of those. But this was a supremely frustrating game, the Miami game, and to an extent as well, that game against Indy 11, where it just, you know, you had teams, especially Miami, they get, you know, the early lead, they crew answer back with a tremendous goal from Cucho, but just this team's really inability when another team wants to just throw everybody behind the ball, they just can't find a way to unlock it and find that goal so far. It's, you know, I wouldn't say it's a trend yet, but I think it's also a fact that, you know, this team hasn't spent a lot of time trailing in the MLS this season. And so, you know, again, if crew just has a lead for the rest of the season, then, you know, it won't be a problem. We'll be all right. But in the, you know, slim chance that maybe they find themselves behind in a couple more games in the final 24, might be something they want to work on.
Brett, we're not Manchester City. We're not always playing with a lead. I just feel like I'm watching the same game over and over again. What is it tactically that we're not doing, or is it just, I don't know what it is. Is there something that can be put in training that will begin to diffuse these low blocks that we seem to have such a hard time with?
Well, I think it's a bit of a chicken and the egg situation, right? In terms of, is the low block just the way the crew wants to hold on to the ball and possess the ball, is that the problem, or is it the fact that, you know, they're giving up the first goal and teams are pretty comfy sitting back at that point? I would argue it's more of a, you got to stop giving up soft goals. And I think the Miami game, we saw two pretty bad ones are kind of the result a little bit of a potential blueprint of the Revs game, right, in terms of kind of inviting the wing backs on and then the crew Crew's center backs get a little bit too narrow. There's a turnover, 2v1, and they're out the other side into the space that's been vacated by the, by the wing backs. So if you don't give up two kind of crap goals, we're probably not worried too much about the low block, because I think teams are going to just have to, you know, naturally play more. But there is something about the width, and how it affects the high line that the Crew center backs are playing. I think we can hear from Wilfried Nancy, he's like, I want them to play this way. I want them to be brave. I want them to, to invite that pressure on and play through it. But right now we've seen a couple different examples of that just flat out not working. And then the high line being borderline unsustainable, especially if the attack kind of seems to kind of tread water a little bit and be a little bit just blah and meh. So yeah, it's not one thing. The width is definitely concerning. Will Sands' injury is maybe looming a little bit larger than I would have expected, especially given the Jimmy Madranda signing and why that even happened, if he's not really going to play. But yeah, I don't know. It's all I know is that the momentum that this team had created in those early kind of into March, into those early weeks of April, that momentum seems pretty gone at the moment. And now they have to rediscover a little bit of confidence going forward.
So Murph, Alex Matan, who we talked very glowingly about for several weeks in this program, was subbed off at halftime. Is that a result of his lack of production? Are we to read anything into that? What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Well, I think they needed something more in the attack. Bart mentioned that people were talking about, this is a Caleb Porter like performance. I would put it more almost like some of those Greg Berhalter performances, where you possess, you cross the ball. They crossed the ball like 22 times or something along those lines and completed 5 of them. So I think the idea is you got Jason Russell Rowe in the game to be your target guy, so to speak. I am still very much of the opinion that Cucho can be that guy if they choose to use him that way. Right now, he's more of a roaming attacker than a number 9. And I was a little surprised that it was Jason Russell Rowe, especially after Wednesday, where he struggled to really be dangerous in front of goal, despite being in some positions. But Christian Ramirez, to me, seems like the more true, poacher, get on the end of balls and into the box type of guy. But I think Matan's play has been overall good, but remember, this is a young kid who hasn't played a lot these last 2 years. It's kind of what we've said about a lot of the guys that have played, the Will Sands before he got hurt, the Joe Farsies, not so much Aiden Morris, but, Sean Zawatsky when he steps in, Philip Quinton, who had to come in for Milos early on. They are young players who are going to have up and down performances. And this is what you're getting when you decide to kind of go with so many of those young guys, as opposed to some of the veterans that could step in. So, it was interesting, another young guy coming in, but I think obviously Wilfried Nancy had seen something in training to feel like, okay, Jason is the guy that they can probably grab something. It just, again, didn't work out because of the numbers Miami had bunkered, so to speak, into that penalty box.
Can I go back to something that Brett kind of mentioned and talking about Jimmy Madranda? I think you've probably touched on this a bit too, Smurf, but like I am done with the Yayaboah experiment at wingback. I've been done with that for several weeks. And I am stumped if, especially if he's healthy. I mean, this is a guy who on his third touch with the team scored a, you know, incredible goal, who's, you know, racked up some accolades on, you know, on some good Seattle teams, you know, at wingback, and that you lose Will Sands for the year, and we're not seeing any of them, that to the point where they go and Wilfried was with the team when they went out and got Madrand, I believe.
Yep.
And so I'm just kind of stumped why we're not seeing him, and why we're seeing so much of Yacht in this position specifically, where I just it does not seem that you're getting anything out of him, and teams are just going hard after him because they know that's a weakness on that left side of the field every week.
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, one that hasn't really been answered. And, I mean, Madrenda was, I think, questionable for this game. So, you know, we didn't see him possibly. You know, this is a guy who's dealt with injuries a lot in his career, and I think they are being careful with him. He was hurt in the preseason. But the most extensive action he's gotten is with Crew 2, and that is not what I would have guessed. For a, you know, probably your biggest signing this offseason, at least in terms of, I assume, money spent and name recognition and whatnot. He to me was the starting left wing back coming into this season. That's how I had him pegged. I thought Will Sands would certainly factor in, but I think it speaks to how much they trust him that they go out and quickly trade for another wing back, as opposed to, you know, letting a guy like that get his opportunity. And maybe he still will once he's healthy. And maybe the concern is just that he's going to keep getting banged up. So you want, you know, depth there for that position. But I did ask Wilfried Nancy last week about that, and he kind of went around the topic and talked about Emmonson, who did play for Crew 2 last week and I thought looked good, instead of really, you know, answering whether or not it was a indictment. I didn't use that word, but, you know, on Yao and on Jimmy Madrenda. So, look, I think it's a really good question. And I think once he's healthy and consistently not playing, I think then we can really begin to question it. It's just kind of been on and off. But I do think we should have seen him more already this season than what we have. And now, especially with Will Sands being out.
Yeah, I mean, as it stands, that goal is really expensive. I mean, it was exciting when we got it, but that's about all we've gotten. Brett, I feel like, you know, we talked about Yao. He's miscast. And I also feel like another member of our cast that is in the wrong part in this play is Steven Moreira is not able to do Steven Moreira things, and he seems kind of lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a – he's kind of in a tough spot in that he both has to drive a lot of the buildup and also be responsible for the space that Mo Farsi vacates by being so far forward. And I think both of those things are somewhat antithetical to each other, natural opposites, especially with the type of player that he is, to be kind of responsible for both. I think is a bit of a challenge, and I'm still, you know, Murph and I were texting about this after the game. I think it was the second Miami goal. Like I still am not entirely sure whose fault that one is, but I can make the argument that Steve's caught too far up the field and then the ball gets played in behind and Mo's not in a position to be able to do it, and get back. And then the ball in behind is, it turns into a cross, a cutback, and they score. But like, you know, I think, you know, Mo Farsi, I believe, leads this team in minutes, right now. And Steven is the next closest guy, I would say, minutes played. I wonder a little bit about his health, that, He was grabbing at his hamstring when they subbed him out of the game. He was and then Emmonson was, I think, was supposed to come in for Yao, and then that ended up not happening. So I think it's certainly an eye on Steven's health going forward. And I think in my mind, if he is out, like, that's a massive problem for this team, because the depth at center back isn't there, at least in a way that I feel somewhat comfortable with, especially in the offensive distribution way. It's tough. For me, I think it's my biggest issue right now with the way kind of Steven affects everything going forward is the lack of ability to have any line breaking passes. And some of that is due to the fact that that front three, the fluidity there doesn't give them a ton of options in behind. That also is eliminated by the fact that, you know, they're basically playing in the opponent's half and have been for the last two games. But there seems to be some of the connectivity, some of the ability to combine that was so dynamic when the Crew were scoring all those goals back in March. That seems to have evaporated a little bit. Teams, I think, are starting to understand that some of that width that the Crew have is a little bit misleading because they're trying to invite you through, invite teams forward and then break a line through the middle, and then the ball goes wide. Whereas teams are trying to force them to make that first pass be the wide pass, which is what Caleb Porter's team struggled with all the time. And I tweeted about this after the game. Obviously, the sample size is not fair to levy this on, this Wilfred Nancy team. But when Caleb Porter's teams played like what we saw against Miami, and everyone called it Porter ball and went nuts on Twitter, he got crushed for it. And I didn't quite see the same. At the very least, the same kind of recognition that in large part was relatively the same thing. Because what we saw was a game where they struggled to break down an opponent. They gave up soft goals, and the only way it looked like scoring, they looked like they were going to score, was Cucho doing something absurd, which he did. So I think there are some serious issues with this right now in terms of both confidence, the ability to combine, and the buildup. And right now teams are, it's like, you know what, you can have the ball for 60% of the time because we feel like we can get at you in transition moments because we don't trust your defense with that high line.
I think, okay, so it's 10 games, but I think it's a good enough. I was going to save this for later if we talk about overall impressions, but I think this is a good time to do it, talking about Marrera and some of the things Brett brought up. Wilfred Nancy wants to play the way Wilfred Nancy wants to play, which I think is fine. And it worked in Montreal in year two. It did not work in Montreal in year one.
Right.
But you don't have the players for this right now. You're fitting square pegs into round holes to fit roles that aren't there. And I think Marrera is a good example of a guy who can do a lot of different things. And so it's like, okay, let's have you play this unique center back role that we worked on a lot in Montreal from the offing, as opposed to maybe let's work on this throughout the season with three center backs and experiment with it. And that's just one example. I think the Jason Russell Rowe thing we talked about, he could play two forwards last year because you could bring in a Kai Kamara to get on the end of a bunch of crosses or start Kai Kamara. And they don't have that guy. These center backs aren't center backs that are comfortable playing out of the back all the time. And they haven't gotten caught in the sense that it's cost the team, but there have certainly been some nervy moments. And so look, if the idea is to work this stuff throughout the course of this season, and we're going to get it to work by the year's end and, you know, be better for it next year, then that's fine. And that's one philosophy, but I think they should come out and say that. And Wilfred Nancy has said something along the lines of like, the results don't necessarily matter right now. It's about performance and things like that.
Which is crap, by the way. That's such a crap statement.
Yeah. And they said that from the beginning. And, you know, we've already touched on the fact that we don't understand given the roster and whatnot. But This team for 8 years played a 4-3-2-1 primarily. And now you're asking for a lot of different things, even if you don't want to talk formations and whatnot. You're just asking for a lot of different things. And as I think we've all kind of pointed out, teams have, and I think it really started with New England, figured out the places where they can attack this team because they aren't as familiar, as disciplined, and have the pieces to do things. And like having a Yao Yabo out there, well, we'll just play him behind the wing back. I mean, it's an obvious thing to do when a guy's not the natural position there. Even with two young wing backs out there, that's a hard position to play. You have to do a lot. You have to recognize a lot of things because you are essentially both a winger and a fullback, and you don't have that cover of another winger in front of you as a fullback or a fullback behind a winger. So, you know, you have a lot to do to get back into that space. And then you don't have three natural center backs to clear crosses and things like that. You have two. So I think that is becoming apparent is, you know, if they're just going to continue to work this until it works, fine. But I think you're going to see more and more performances like that you saw in both of the games this past week. And even in Charlotte, especially if they give up that first goal, when they haven't given up the first goal, as Bart pointed out on the off, they've been able to dominate teams and it's been entertaining. But those are also bad teams. Let's be fair. You know, and not that I think Charlotte or
and Miami's a bad team too, by the way. Yeah, that's right. They gave up two goals to the worst attack in MLS right now. And I think, and not only did they give up the goals, but like on the other side of that, if you take away Lucas's two penalty kicks, this is an average MLS team in terms of chance creation. I think they have if you take away the two penalties, it's the biggest X goal to goal difference in MLS right now. I think, or at least second. St. Louis's is crazy, and they're regressing a little bit to the mean. But I think it's to me, it's exactly what we were talking about. It's Murph in that the buildup and everything, all of that's well and good, but you still have to be able to like not play down to competition. And then also you can't just give up bad goals. Like none of it works if you give up crappy goals. Like the whole, like if Barcelona during like the Pep Guardiola days, if they gave up crappy goals, it didn't work. Nothing on the other side worked. So it's because I just don't think they have the firepower, certainly don't have the firepower to win games 3-1, 4-2, 3-2, because we've really only seen a couple different kind of examples of that being really dynamic in the final third. And so it's frustrating because all of it goes back to where we felt like this team was at a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And now it's like that peak and valley, that ebb and flow. It feels like we're touching on every extreme, which is probably the hallmark of a young team and having young players. But I still feel like the floor of this team should be better than the last handful of performances that we've seen. And that's a problem because I don't see some of the frustration, or I don't get the same sense of like wondering from both Nancy and sometimes with some of the players that there's some very glaring, obvious issues. And no one seems to be like willing to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we have to take a look at that.
Yeah.
No, it seems to be very much like everything is kind of theoretical and philosophical. And it's like, no, man, like, They're attacking your left back because he's an inverted right winger. Oh, by the way, you signed a left back in the offseason that may or may not be hurt, but like that's a problem. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to, you know, say, I think we would all agree that like when they're at their best, this is a lot of fun to watch, right?
No doubt. Absolutely.
And I brought up the Greg Berhalter comparison before, and I think it's similar to that in the sense that like he brought in this different style of play that not a lot of MLS teams had tried, And there's a reason for that. And that's because in MLS, you give up crappy goals. And you're not Barcelona. You're not the most talented team on the field. And this was a big issue with Greg's teams at times, especially early in the year when they were integrating new pieces. Well, now you're integrating an entirely new system. And, you want to play in this kind of free-flowing to some degree way. And there just aren't players that are ready for it. And it's MLS. There's parity. There's all sorts of stuff that happens in a game, you know. There's terrible officiating, things like that, where it doesn't work all the time. And it took Greg 2-3 years before they finally were like, okay, we'll play kickball against the Red Bulls and we'll give the ball to some of these other teams. And, you know, I mean, I remember having a conversation where he explained, like, you know, we want to play this way and I forced this for too long and it cost us in some crucial games. And then, you know, they make a run to the MLS Cup final and probably should have won that game if things go their other way. I won't bring all that up, but you know, that it took that moment of like, okay, we have to win these games that we aren't winning. And right now, look, Wilfred Nancy, it didn't work his first year. They got it to work his second year in Montreal. And yeah, that was the best road team in MLS last year. They were able to figure out ways to get wins where a lot of other teams can't. So the time it's going to take, is it worth it to force that in games? I think you can still train these things and work on them some little bits at a time without going full blown. But, you know, you're 10 games in the season and you're trying to do this stuff still. So I think we kind of are where they are right now.
Well, I think we're at a tipping point in the schedule. You know, it's odd, as Brett pointed out before we started recording, that we have the week off and then a bunch of important matches are all crammed together, starting with a week from today where we're back in the U.S. Open Cup against Loudoun United, which is at least they used to be an affiliate of DC United. Is that still true?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, they're in the USL. They used to be affiliated with, because they're in like Maryland, right?
Yeah, well, no, they're Loudoun County, Virginia.
Oh, they're in Virginia. Okay, but it's in that area. So we have to go there and play in the U.S. Open Cup, and that's road matches in the U.S. Open Cup are no fun. So we have that to worry about. And then on May 13th, and we'll preview this more next week, we have Orlando, which is right there with us on the table. And then we are home again on a Wednesday, May 17th, to what appears to be another dreadful LA Galaxy team. So you got to make hay there, because Hell is Real is right on the heels of that on Saturday, May 20th in Cincinnati. And, they're not slowing down at all. They are a new Cincinnati team that we haven't seen before. And then another good team on May 28th, Nashville, that's on the road. And then back home to a mediocre Colorado team. And that's just May. I feel like we're going to know what our future holds by the end of the match on May 31st, right? Because we only have four games in June before we start staring down this Leagues Cup coming up at the end of July. So it's really like the crew need to accumulate some points between now and the end of the month.
Well, this was the opportunity these last two games. Right.
Yeah.
Three. If you told me that they could come out with, you know, eat 4 points, get a draw in Charlotte and beat Miami, I think that would have been acceptable. And to lose both of them, you know, is painful, because these are beatable teams. And look, Wilfred Nancy talked last week, not to go back over the Charlotte game, but I thought it was interesting. And this is, again, a Greg Berhalter, even Caleb Porter thing. He talked about the passes, the entries into the box and the chances, you know, all this was, they were great. And, you know, he just said credit to Charlotte for the way that they defended. And I think he'd probably say something similar about the Miami game. I don't know the numbers there, but, you know, to Brett's point earlier about no one, you know, kind of not freaking out, but having some concern about this. Yeah. You're creating these chances and that's great. And I think that, you know, you hope that then that leads to goals being scored, but you've scored two, let's include the Open Cup game. You've scored two goals in the last three games. One is a incredible shot from Cucho. And the other is you had to bring a starter into the game late against an Indy 11 team that shouldn't have been still in the game at that point. And, you know, good run by Mo Farsi, but that's not a goal that you should need at that point in the match. It's not like they're now Indy's keeper did make a bunch of saves, but it's not like they're, you know, peppering the net most MLS games. And, you know, I'll keep saying it till I'm blue in the face. Keep Cucho more or less in front of the width of the post and let him be your number nine. I know he likes to float. I know Wilfred Nancy wants him to float. I'll have some numbers on this and the what we learned in terms of where he's getting the ball and shooting the ball and things like that. But you know, he's your best goal scorer. Let him be that.
Well, and Brett, and I know this was noted in the game grades that Lucas had a nice match, but it seems like the shots sort of started coming from further and further away and lower percentage. That's a sign of a frustrated team. That's like, well, we're not going to be able to get a good look in the box. So we got to start shooting from elsewhere. So I feel like we're kind of going around in circles here, and it seems like we're more concerned about it than they are. And in this analytics world, right, where it's like process becomes so important, and you know, they can look at the data and go, well, our process is good, we're just not getting results. Well, after a while, who cares? You know, yeah. You don't win on process, and I feel like we sort of get lost in the weeds with this stuff.
Yeah, there is a little bit of yeah, I think it's lost in the sauce, right? That like, oh, you know, are we fulfilling our obligations in terms of like philosophical play? Like, oh, that's great. Are we losing 2-1? Not great. You know, and like that, I think could sometimes be that in my mind was like, is a bit of the difference between, like what I would call like a European coaching style in the MLS coaching style, and some of the differences and dichotomies of those two kind of thought processes. And for the most part in the history of this league, the European coaching style hasn't really worked or been successful.
Now, take me through what, compare and contrast the styles of coaching and why.
So we're going to wander into some, what I would call speculative kind of philosophy in terms of what I've heard from having conversations around the league, in that if anyone ever listened to the podcast that Benny Failhaber used to do with Ike Opara and a couple other guys who would kind of pop in and out, when Benny was over in Europe, He said it was like such a transformational time for him in terms of understanding the locker room dynamics of a European soccer team versus an MLS team, and kind of the pros and cons of that. And one of the things that he was shocked to experience firsthand was kind of the attitude of teammates in terms of their the amount of concern that they put on winning as opposed to playing. And one of the things that he said, this is probably like 5-6 years ago, and it still has stuck with me to this day, was that when he was in Europe, he was shocked with how many guys spent all of their energy, emotional energy, physical energy, getting into the starting 11. And that was basically all they cared about. The result after that was kind of a secondary thing. They wanted to start. They wanted to play. If they won, great. If they didn't, fine. And that can sometimes flow upward into the managerial ranks, especially when you look at how managers in Europe build teams. How many times have we seen, I mean, it happens in the Premier League every single year, a manager, like, you know, let's say like Chelsea has this fantastic year, right? And then they bring in new players from who didn't touch the ball for Chelsea last year, new players, and they start right away, even though the previous team, you know, finished second and was incredible. And like, that doesn't make much sense. To me, like, there's the kind of the old joke, like, nothing makes sense to my American ears. That like, it's a very European way of building teams. It's like, well, we don't like it, we'll just fire all the players and we'll bring in our own guys. That is just not possible in Major League Soccer. It's not how the rosters are built. It's not how the fans will not suffer through that in Major League Soccer. It's not in the best interest of the club long-term, specifically with all the business side of things that most European clubs don't really have to worry about, or at least worry about in kind of the same way. And the European managers can sometimes struggle with that because it's not just like a open market in the same way that MLS is not an open market in the same way that that Europe can be. What does work, and I think it's something that we've seen bits and pieces of it throughout the league's history, is the way that some European managers can kind of establish like a really fun locker room, and the way that some of these guys can, especially with younger players, can make build up those younger players. It's like, I believe in you because, you know, X, Y, and Z. Whereas there's maybe a little bit more of a pragmatic approach with American managers, MLS managers. So that kind of like push pull is, I think we're seeing bits and pieces of that a little bit, that Wilfried Nancy's building this team very much in a European image because, you know, he's European, but there is the foundation of his kind of coaching philosophies were essentially molded and formed in MLS. But it's kind of weird to see, in my mind, the starting lineup has been kind of put together basically since day one, with some of the guys that were already on the team. That's been what's kind of odd to me in the basically the trust from day one in putting it in young guys when there were some MLS veterans that basically haven't gotten a look. That's been a little bit odd to me. And that, I think, is a good example of, like, you know, it's not a direct like, oh, we bring in new players like you would in Europe, but it's kind of like that. And it's kind of an example of some of that European philosophy that he's bringing to the club right now. And you're seeing some growing pains with that, with the results.
Yeah, Brett, I think that's so incredibly spot on. And also those podcasts were great. If people haven't listened to those, I think they were coming out like right around COVID. So they were great.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like Josh Williams told me when I talked to him for the story I did a couple weeks ago, like just how much fun they're having and like how the team, like there's no ego individually. There's one team ego, and that's what Wilfried Nancy wants to build. And, right, you know, the locker room and everything. And you hear Wilfried Nancy talk about the, you know, I asked last week about Cucho and like not rushing him back, but knowing you need him back because he's your best chance to score goals. And he kind of disagreed with me a bit in the sense that like every player, you know, can do different things. And you know, he definitely didn't want it to be pointed at Cucho as like, he's the guy, right? He wants it to be this inclusive, natural thing. And I don't mean to keep going back to Greg, but Greg grew up playing in Europe and then started his managerial career in Europe. And it was a lot of the same stuff. And then he brought in Caleb, who didn't want to play young guys as much, was very much the American win, you know, type of thing. So I think that's a really good point. And like, you know, I think if you give Wilfried Nancy time in what he's doing, it will and can work.
Right.
We're just, you know, like you said, in the American model, are we willing to sit around and, you know, wait through a season where they sit right about the playoff line like they did last year under Caleb, and then, you know, hope for better results next year?
But let's step back a little bit, and because I feel like we need to look at this in context a little bit. It's 10 games into the season. This has been a 3-game stretch. First of all, U.S. Open Cup, I almost put that those games are a bit of an outlier. That was a team that they should have taken care of against Indy 11, but they managed 20 shots against Miami. 8 on target. And again, that's still, you know, it's not, but generally you get that many shots and 8 on target, you're going to finish more than one of them. That's not saying any, you know, that's not saying that there was a reason that, you know, we should be happy with the quality of chances that they surrendered. But this isn't like some of those Caleb teams that weren't generating, and we are 10 games in. And this is still a team that is you've got 6 to 7 players in that lineup that are under the age of 23. Right now, after Milos Jegonek goes down, you've got, you know, none of those guys playing on that back three are guys that were playing center back for you in Columbus last year. Only one of those guys was playing center back in MLS. You know, you've still got we can talk about Yaw and everything, but Cucho's been out for most of the season. So yes, they lost a couple games that I think should have gone the other way. And I think the fact that I feel like they could well have gone the other way, I feel a little bit better about it. Yes, you'd like to not be dropping points right now, but I think coming into the season, if you said, hey, look, crew, Cucho's going to miss 6 games. They're going to have a whole bunch of guys, or however many games he missed, players injured, and you're sitting at 4-4-2, 10 games in, everyone here is taken. And by the way, you've got 6 starters that are 23 years old. Aloy Room's been out most of the season. All of us are taking it. We're talking about Wilfred Nancy like he's on year 3 with this team and not less than a third of the season.
Are you saying that we need to pull ourselves together and have a little perspective, Bart? Is that what you're saying?
Just a wee bit, I think. Wow. And again, we can criticize. Right. We've got to – but I'm willing – I've seen enough really good stuff when this team is clicking, and even enough good stuff – when they're not and struggling, you know, and struggling to do it, that I feel just a bit rosier right now than I feel like the rest of the folks.
Yeah. I think it's tough too. Right. Cause like, there is in my mind, it's like, tons more room to be optimistic than pessimistic with this team. Right. And I think especially the ongoing youth development that these guys that the minutes that these young players are getting is in some ways in a big picture sense, like in a long term sense, regardless of results, that's a net positive. Mm-hmm. But where I'm starting to get a little bit concerned is the fact that these results most recently are against teams that I think, based on just the roster on paper, this Cruz team should smash. And I would feel a little bit less concerned if this was happening, you know, if the Charlotte game is against NYCFC or Cincinnati, if the Miami game is against like Nashville or even the New England game. I think, you know, New England's first in the conference right now. Like that's probably a better example of that, but the analytics aren't really backing up some of what I'm seeing, on the field, and defensively they look vulnerable. And I think that's especially concerning if it looks like Milos and Steven might be out with injuries because of the lack of depth at center back. All that being said, if Cucho continues to find bits and moments of magic like we saw against Miami with that outrageous goal that he scored, and that happens to coincide with Lucas being Lucas, who's having a fantastic season, starts the season so far, that in my mind erases a lot of the problems in the defensive kind of half, in the defensive third. It's just a matter of kind of making that happen and making that work. And if you know, anything that you've heard from me over the last 45 minutes, those two guys, I think, are the driving point for me with the optimism is that if they continue and that kind of rising tide, raising all boats, it only makes everyone else better. They just have to have, I just want to see it be a little bit more dynamic, especially against teams that this Crew team should be able to beat with their like C plus game. And right now we've seen a couple examples where that just hasn't happened most recently over the last few weeks.
Well, we're being graded on a curve.
Real quick. Here's my positivity, Bart, because I do think we're going to get criticized for being too negative. So I'm glad you said something, because I do think, and we've overreacted the other way too, right? I mean, we've literally...
Let's be honest.
No,
absolutely not.
I stand by everything that I've said. But
Darlington Nagbe, I thought, was much... He was the more aggressive, get forward more Darlington Nagbe this game. And I think that made the attack better. They didn't score enough, but I think that is more of what we've wanted to see from Darlington. Now, some of that is there were 10, 11 guys behind the ball, so there was nowhere for Darlington to go but forward. But, look, I'd like to see that. And obviously Lucas had a hell of a game. It's unfortunate that he couldn't contribute more, like, statistically. But I think those are certainly positive signs with those guys. And you're right. As Cucho gets back into the mix of things, you know, they continue to work with him, all that stuff, I think will help. And, you know, you figure out how best to use him, get him scoring, because, look, he set a goal at the beginning of the year. He said it. He wants to be the Golden Boot winner. And if he's out of position to not score, I think eventually he goes to the coach and says, I need to be in front of goal. Or he takes it upon himself to be in front of goal more. So some of these issues.
I think Wilfried allows these players, especially in that front three, to be pretty, you know, fluid and you know, kind of pick their spaces and react around each other. I feel like Cucho's the one bringing himself away from, and you know, granted, Wilfried could sit there and say, no, you need to be number nine there, you know, I don't want to see you outside the edges of the box. But I feel like Cucho's the one kind of putting himself in those positions a lot of the case.
Yeah, that could be. I just, you know, base it off of what we saw last year. And looking at the numbers, he's doing the roaming thing more. And so to me, the difference is a change in coach and a change in tactics. Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe that's just, you know, that's how he would have played if he'd been here the entire season and he felt like he needed to be in front of goal. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. If they're not scoring goals and he's not scoring goals, you have to figure out a way to get him going. And so we'll see.
And that's I think, to kind of put a cherry on top of that, my concern in large part is not really with the attack, because I think that the goals are there. Some of the finishing stuff, especially in the Charlotte game, Christian Mieres has a couple chances to be able to score and just doesn't. And like that happens, right? Like, you know, how many times did we hear Caleb say, like, goals change games, right? And as cliche as that is, it was a lot. Like, it got to the point where it was, you know, it was on the Caleb Porter bingo card right there with we outplayed them. But my concern is in the back end. I do think the attack to me is where they show, I think, the biggest separation, and that is a massive positive. And for me, especially personally, that was not something that I thought the Caleb Porter teams separated in the same way, or at least showed the potential to separate. And so I think it's like one of those things where it's just like one or two little tweaks here and there. And maybe I think we're perhaps underestimating the psychological impact of Will Sands being out and just kind of how that can maybe shake up a locker room. Season ending injury can shake up a locker room. But like, I have no real worries with the attack. I think it's just one or two little things. Some of the statistics I think could kind of maybe kind of distract us a little bit from maybe what we're actually seeing on the field. And then it just looks different, just a little bit more dynamic, and the goals are going to start flying in. It's just a matter, maybe in my mind, are they 2-0 games or are they 4-2 games? And that maybe makes me a little bit concerned in the long-term sense. But if you've made it this far, 50 some odd minutes, like, there are some very specific concerns I have in like the detailing, but in large part, I'm still very, very bullish on both this Columbus Crew roster and Wilfred Nancy's positive influence on it, both in a like a capital C club sense, and that like I think it's a huge net gain for the club, but also in a results sense, I think they're coming. I think it's happening. It's just maybe not happening as quick as I would have hoped.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's my positive. It could be worse. I'm looking at the MLS table and I'm just shaking my head at some of this, like Sporting Kansas City without a win, 3-4, 15 against. That's shocking. I mean, they used to be one of the bells of the ball.
Get this. They didn't make the playoffs last year for the first time in quite a while. This year, they give Pete Vermes a contract extension, and that is how they start the season.
Did you see Johnny Russell, by the way, offering up one of my all-time favorite MLS quotes after their most recent game, where someone asked him basically in the locker room, like, why is it so bad? And he said, I have no idea, and I have no idea and I don't know how to fix it. And Johnny Russell, by the way, an extremely positive guy. And if you're losing him in that regard, at least in the you know, emotional immediate aftermath of a game, rut-row.
God, this one's for you, Bart. In 11th place in the West is Austin FC.
Oh, man, who could have seen that?
Nine points.
It's almost as if when every like low XG shot goes in the net, like it exactly. Did last year, it's almost as if the soccer gods will even that back out. And you,
what are you saying about regression? What are you saying about St. Louis City FC in 2024?
True.
Yeah, they're still at a plus 10. Red Bulls, their only victory was over us. Otherwise, it's been pretty dismal. 6 losses, 3 draws, dead last in the Eastern Conference.
Next week, you can really dive into other MLS teams.
Yeah, that's kind of a little teaser because I don't look at the West especially very often. I'm just like, I am completely gobsmacked at how bad Sporting Kansas City has been. That's something.
Don't watch their games either because they're not fun.
I don't imagine.
On the Red Bull front, is there any other update on Van Zier? Did the team end up taking – I didn't see really anything else reported on that. Did they end up taking any action other than that lukewarm PR speak apology?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything since we talked about it the last time.
That's extremely on brand for Major League Soccer.
It's entirely possible I could have missed it, but you know, I feel like that would have been put out there pretty heavily if they'd done it.
Well, he was suspended 6 games.
Yeah.
It started as indefinite, and then I believe it's at 6. He gave an interview. I forget what the or what media outlet it was, where he tried to kind of clarify like the situation and scenario, and he mentioned the word that he used, and what he, the word that he used and what he thought it meant doesn't really match up with any definition of the word, regardless if English isn't your first language. So that was a bit of a miss for me, but he does appear to be extremely authentic in his contrition, which I suppose is at the very, very least a good step, so to speak.
The lowest bar to clear.
literally the lowest bar to possibly clear. In my mind, I'm still feeling a bit unresolved with it and still angry. And I think the if he has a job when these six games are up, he's extremely, extremely fortunate.
And still looking at, you know, that Red Bulls organization too, you know, what sort of, you know, message are you sending when, again, you know, you've got that even worse apology from Gerhard, the manager, you know, yeah. If you're one of his teammates, if you're a teammate of color, you know, in that organization all the way through, and you know how many, you know, how involved this organization is internationally. Boy, I just, you know, hate to see them struggling too, after just handling that so poorly.
It's hard to make stuff like that just sort of go away by ignoring it. So that's, they need a little help in the PR area there. I mean, you know, six games, is that enough? I don't know. I suppose it can be sorted. The further punishment can be meted out on the pitch, I suppose, if you want to look at it that way.
It will be.
Yeah. Real quick, we touched on Milos leaving the game early. What do we know, Murph?
We know nothing because the team is basically off this week. They get back tomorrow, which is Thursday. So, and there's no media availability. So we won't find out anything until next week.
Okay. It didn't. Brett, do you have any thoughts on just a wild guess on what sort of thing that might have been?
Well, he was grabbing at the back of his leg, and that he made a kind of a stretching like tackle block attempt, relatively recent to when he went down and eventually out of the game. But what's concerning is that happened. And then Steven Moreira basically had a similar grabbing at the back of your leg and then subsequent removal sub out from the game. I suppose if there's a silver lining that those happen while you have basically a week off, those guys presumably would have a week off. Remains to be seen, and concerning, as we said earlier, because of the lack of depth at center back kind of with this team. Wish them the best. Steven, especially, I think, has had a really, really great season, start to the season, in spite of basically not, you know, playing a brand new position and being played out of position. So if they are injured, you know, hopefully a speedy recovery to both of them.
Yeah, I don't even want to imagine what life will be like if they miss any time. We can't afford that, definitely. Well, I guess we'll just kind of wind things down here. We're going to be back on Monday at Saucy Brew Works, and we have the U.S. Open Cup against Loudon. What are they called again? Loudon Wainwright was a singer-songwriter. It is
Loudon United, Ray, or Loudon SCFC?
Loudon United. And they play, I seem to remember seeing a few minutes of them on ESPN Plus once. They play in a pretty small park. So it's going to be that kind of atmosphere. And will we care about it? I don't know. Should we care about it? Should Wilfred Nazi care about it?
You absolutely should, because I've said this in the when we were previewing the Indy 11 game, that I can make the argument that of the trophies that are available to Major League Soccer teams, this is the easiest one to win. But I We're I'm not going to turn this into a promotion relegation conversation because I don't care. But
did you see the football franchise worth graphic that came up today? They're like LAFC is the sixth most valuable soccer franchise in the world.
What?
You're never going to have promotion relegation. I'm sorry.
I guess, like, yeah, I don't care. I mean, that's amazing, I guess, especially wow. shout out to all the people who own
Cruise in the top 40 or top 50.
Well, that makes sense. But there is something about like the Crew playing in like a four figure seated capacity stadium that like is kind of exceptional and fun and interesting. And, you know, like with a single camera broadcasting the game, you know, and some poor soul probably calling it from a closet in Fort Lauderdale at Vista off a satellite. You know, it's just a glorious competition and it's in, I love to see a little bit of emphasis on it because I think that it shows respect to the opponents, especially when those opponents are Major League Soccer teams. But also I think specifically with the Crew, it shows respect to, the team's roots and, the Hunt family and what the Open Cup kind of signifies in terms of this kind of common denominator of soccer throughout all the different leagues and tiers of soccer that we have across the country. So I love it. I'm excited. I will be watching, regardless of the production quality, I would be watching.
Let's just take a Massive Report podcast road trip to Virginia. It's only like 6 hours. Sure.
It's kind of hard to do in the middle of the week.
Yeah, 6 hours on your Wednesday. We'll 6 hours back. We'll get back in time for everyone to be ready for work in the morning. Yeah.
Pat's driving.
I mean, I'm basically still unemployed. So, I got nothing but time at the moment.
So Brett offers to buy the bus.
There you go. Yeah, I demand a deluxe motor coach. All right, so Monday we'll assemble at Saucy and we'll try to figure out this Loudoun Club. And a big match a week from Saturday with Orlando City with the table implications. We are level with them as we speak, though they have a game in hand, which they'll take care of this weekend. So we'll look at how they do and how it pertains to the Crew. And we'll do all that next Monday at Saucy Brewworks. Saucy Brewworks, the beer, the coffee, the food, it's all tremendous there at 3rd and Michigan and Harrison West. Like and subscribe to the Massport Podcast for Murph, for Brett, for Bart. I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD 92.9, and we'll talk to you in just a few days on the Massport Podcast.